This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, Sandy Rios. I'm not Tony Perkins today. Tony is off doing something very important, and here I am sitting in for him. I am the Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, and I host the morning show, Sandy Rios in the Morning, for American Family Radio. Well, you heard already in the news that we know that the Oscars had a million less viewers last night. And I think for most of us, we're not confused about why that might be. But if you had watched, you would have seen that yesterday afternoon, a piece of scaffolding fell. Jimmy Kimmel had just been on the stage rehearsing. He was not on the stage. No one was hurt, but I'm not sure exactly how they got it back together in time, but they did. And if you'd watched the segment where they're giving tribute to all of the people in the industry who have lost their lives in 2016, that very moving portrayal, you would have seen that a picture flashed across the screen of a woman who was still very much alive. A terrible mistake. But then, if you had tuned in, you would have heard this. Let's listen.
And the Academy Award for Best Picture.
You're awesome. Come on. La La Land.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you to the Academy. Thank you to Lionsgate. Thank you to our incredible cast and crew. We're all up here right now.
We lost, by the way, but, you know.
Guys, I'm sorry.
No, there's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Moonlight won. Come on, this is not a joke.
This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture. Moonlight, Best Picture.
This is very unfortunate what happened. Personally, I blame Steve Harvey for this. I would like to see you get an Oscar anyway. Why can't we just give out a whole bunch of them?
I'm going to be really proud to hand this to my friends from Moonlight.
That's nice of you.
Like that, it ever happened. And Price Waterhouse, of course, is the big legal entity behind the Oscars and always prepares the envelopes. And Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway were to announce the Best Picture, and lo and behold, they announced the wrong picture for various reasons, which you can read about. And then the cast of and the producers and all of that from La La Land came up. They're accepting the award, and then they find out they're on the stage, and now they have to give it not to themselves but to another cast of characters, Moonlight. Very embarrassing. And you know what I thought about was, haven't the movie stars in Hollywood and the producers been telling us how disorganized Donald Trump's administration is and how he just can't get it together and how his personnel are so inept, et cetera, et cetera. And how ironic that for their very special night for which they're paid millions to perform the way they perform, including the producers of the event, they've got months to plan it, and they make these terrible mistakes. It does not go without being noticed. And I guess, you know, some of us may be a little satisfied because we're kind of tired of Hollywood acting as though they know so much about things that they know very little about. And by the way, Robert Davi, great guy. He's played a gangster always in License to Kill, Die Hard. I could go on and on. He was on with Tucker Carlson. He had a recommendation. Of course, the rest of the Oscars was all about, a lot of it was about bashing Trump, his immigration orders, pro-immigrant, pro-open borders, et cetera, et cetera. So Robert Davi says this. He says, I propose that Meryl Streep, Chelsea Handler, Richard Gere, Robert De Niro, Christopher Waltz, and others lead an Oscar first. Let's do away with the rules, the barriers, and tickets to the Oscars and after parties such as the swanky Vanity Fair party or the Weinstein's star-studded affair. I ask all migrants, all illegal immigrant criminals, and all unvetted refugees to converge on Hollywood. Come to the Oscars and all the after parties and even those held at mansions or the Chateau Marmont or anywhere else. And he said, then after the party, bring tents and camp out in Bel Air. So anyway, that was Robert Davi. And of course, that is just common sense. Why wouldn't they let that happen since they feel so strongly about no rules, no borders, and no barriers? Well, a lot of things happened over the weekend. I've heard from two different friends from different parts of the country, one from Austin, Texas, and the other from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, good friends who ask me both similar questions. Is Donald Trump doing so terrible? Is he really? He's doing badly, right? He's just seems like things are falling apart. Meanwhile, I was at CPAC this weekend, and that's really not what I observed at all. In fact, I want to play a little bit of what we heard at CPAC. That's the Conservative Political Action Conference that was held at National Harbor, Maryland. This is a montage, and I thank Jesse Waters for this montage of Trump speaking to the media. Let's listen.
We are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake. A few days ago, I called the fake news the enemy of the people, and they are. They have no sources. They just make them up when there are none. The dishonest media did not explain that I called the fake news the enemy of the people, the fake news. They dropped off the word fake. And all of a sudden, the story became the media is the enemy. They take the word fake out. So I'm not against the media. I'm not against the press. I don't mind bad stories if I deserve them. But I am only against the fake news media or press. They shouldn't be allowed to use sources unless they use somebody's name. Let their name be put out there. A source says that Donald Trump is a horrible, horrible human being. Let him say it to my face. I love the First Amendment. Nobody loves it better than me. But the First Amendment gives all of us, it gives it to me, it gives it to you, it gives it to all Americans, the right to speak our minds freely. It gives you the right and me the right to criticize fake news.
That was President Donald Trump at National Harbor at CPAC over the weekend. Now, you know, I'm astounded, really, at the lies that are being told, things that I know aren't true. And one of the most recent was the one that came out Friday that said that somehow Reince Priebus had tried to talk the FBI into announcing that there was no connection between Russia and the Trump administration, that operatives during the campaign were not coordinating with the Russians. As though Reince Priebus picks up the phone, calls the FBI, and tries to twist their arm into doing something illegal. When in fact, what happened was that Deputy Director Andrew McCabe was at the White House, pulled Reince Priebus aside, told him that they had found absolutely no connection between Trump operatives and the Russians in regard to the election. And Priebus then asked him in return, well, can you guys make an announcement about that? Can you just say what you have found? And he goes back to headquarters and they decide, no, they can't do that. So Reince Priebus goes on Sunday talk shows and says, a highly placed source has said that the FBI has found nothing. So now Reince Priebus is being accused of trying to talk the FBI into publicly renouncing any connection between the Trump campaign and the Russians, when that's not what happened at all. It was McCabe who initiated that. And by the way, just can't help but remember that Andrew McCabe was the one whose wife ran for Senate, I believe in Maryland, and it was Terry McAuliffe, Mrs. Clinton's campaign financier, who tried to talk her into running, gave her tons of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars to run. It's just a mess. Can I just say people are not honest around here? All right, so Mika Brzezinski had a real strong opinion about fake news, and this is, you might recall, this is what she said last week.
He's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts. And it could be that while unemployment and the economy worsens, he could have undermined the messaging so much that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job.
That's our job to control what people think. That is our job. Donald Trump, the president, by calling out fake news, can actually control the news and make people not listen, according to her. Can make people not listen to what we're saying. And it's not up to him to tell people what to think. That's our job, to tell people what to think. All right, so another example of fake news, we have April Ryan also on NBC. Let's listen.
Did he also visit slavery? And the reason why I'm asking this is because when he was candidate Trump, he said things like, you know, we made this country, meaning white America, not necessarily black. Did he gain?
I don't know why you would say that. What do you mean?
No, he said that. I heard him say that.
Canada Trump said it was white America that built America, white Americans who built up America. I heard him say that, she says. So then you want to go back and you say, well, what exactly did he say? What did he say? And now we know what he said. Here was Donald Trump on the campaign stump. April Ryan says he said white Americans were the ones that built America. Let's listen to what he said.
We're people that have built this country and made this country great. And we're all together. And we want to get along with everybody.
We're people. We're people. Not we, white Americans, built this country. And we all... But April's sure. She's just sure that he said that white people built America. Although that's not at all what he said. So there is another example of fake news. I just want you to understand what's going on here. Then Chris Matthews and Morning Joe weigh in with their thoughts about the president. Let's listen.
When he said today, America first, it was not just the racial, the Hitlerian background to it, but it was the message.
When he says that the media is the, quote, enemy of the people, where he sounds more like Mussolini or Lenin, which obviously causes concern. That phrase right there makes him sound more like a dictator in training.
Okay, can we just pause for a second? Does anybody remember what Adolf Hitler did? How many million people he slaughtered? Anybody know about Mussolini and how he killed his own brethren and worked with Hitler to kill Jews? Anybody know about Lenin and his ideology and how it laid the groundwork for Stalin to kill millions of Russians? And yet Trump, of course, because he says the media is reporting fake news, he's just like them. Why, there's no difference. He's Hitler, he's Mussolini, he's Lenin. It's just absolutely out of control. Now, I want to pivot to something else. I'm concerned about something. Of course, there is a mixed bag in terms of Donald Trump's appointments. One of the appointments I'm very concerned about is Betsy DeVos. And one of the reasons I'm concerned, she's education secretary, is that I think it was illustrated this last week. We know that Betsy DeVos fought against the Trump administration's overturning of the executive order forcing school districts around the country to embrace transgenderism in public schools and to make accommodations in the bathrooms. So Mrs. DeVos was at CPAC, and my ears caught this, so I've asked my producer to pull it because I want you to hear how she introduced herself to the crowd at CPAC. Let's listen.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for that very warm welcome.
I
love you. I love the energy and enthusiasm that CPAC brings. So I'm Betsy DeVos. You may have heard some of the wonderful things the mainstream media has called me lately. I, however, pride myself on being called a mother, a grandmother, a life partner of 38 years tomorrow, and perhaps the first person to tell Bernie Sanders to his face that there's no such thing as a free lunch.
All right, what was wrong with that? Anybody know? A mother, a grandmother, a life partner. For those of you that follow the sexual left, we know that life partner is a buzzword. That means that I am pretty cool with LGBT issues. It's a very odd choice of words for the new Secretary of Education, and I have to tell you, I'm extremely concerned about her, especially when people tell me that she's appointing people who are very pro-Common Core. She said she was against Common Core, but it's pro-Common Core people surrounding her. So this is a pick that, from my perspective, is not going well. We're going to talk about a lot of things today. When we come back next, the new chairman of the Democratic Party will be the subject of our conversation. And what's going on in Congress? Because they were AWOL at CPAC. We'll talk about that, too.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby, a little girl named Anya, and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans, and they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
Just like they were dead wrong on the chaos of the campaign, and just like they were dead wrong in the chaos of the transition, they are absolutely dead wrong about what's going on today. They're corporatist, globalist media that are adamantly opposed to an economic nationalist agenda like Donald Trump has. Here's why it's going to get worse. Because he's going to continue to press his agenda. And as economic conditions get better, as more jobs get better, they're going to continue to fight. If you think they're going to give you your country back without a fight, you are sadly mistaken.
The weekend, of course, Steve Bannon is Donald Trump's chief advisor. And he's right. The left is not going to give up without a fight, whether it's the media or whether it's the far left fighting at every turn. One of the things that happened over the weekend was Tom Perez was elected the DNC chairman. Brent, I just need to know, do we have our guest? Okay. All right, Tom Perez was elected the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And the reason that's significant, you probably heard that Keith Ellison, the first Muslim congressman in the United States Congress for Minnesota, with strong ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, the pick of Bernie Sanders, was not elected. In fact, he lost by 35 votes only. And now they're painting Tom Perez as a moderate. They say he's a moderate, and so the moderate prevailed for the DNC. But I have to tell you, I know that that's not true. And so I want, in just a second, our guest will come on. If he doesn't go on, I'm just going to tell you myself that Tom Perez is not a moderate. Mayor de Blasio, of course, was supporting Keith Ellison. So was Chuck Schumer, which surprised me a little bit. But Tom Perez was really the hand-picked candidate of Barack Obama. And he did prevail again by 35 votes. Well, Mark Kakorian is the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And I remember some time ago, Mark was the first person that alerted me to who Tom Perez really is. He was the labor secretary under Barack Obama. But before that, he had a very interesting past, and I've asked Mark to join us to talk about it. Hi, Mark, how are you?
How about yourself?
Good. So, Mark, what is it we know about Tom Perez for sure?
Well, we know quite a bit, and what it is that he is a hardcore left-winger. The media coverage of the contest between him and Ellison presented Perez as the, you know, moderate, responsible, middle-of-the-road candidate or something. And that's that's just bonkers. I mean, the guy, he was, even before labor, he was head of the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department under Obama, and that's one of the most important positions in the government for the expansion of federal power over states and localities and individuals. And, you know, he conducted himself, as you would expect, a hardcore left-winger to do. I mean, among other things, he dropped the case against the voter intimidation case against the Black Panther Party. This was, for those of you who follow the news, this was a number of years ago where these Black Panther Party activists patrolled polling places with clubs and things, preventing, making sure that nobody was going to come and vote the wrong way. I mean, it was just appalling. And he just dropped the case because, you know, they were basically on Obama's side, on his administration's side. And then in the immigration area specifically, Tom Perez was on the board and eventually became president of the board of something called Casa de Maryland, which is the main illegal immigration advocacy group in the Washington area. It's funded by Soros, and not only by Soros, it was also funded by Hugo Chavez's government, believe it or not, Venezuela. The Venezuelan government funded this radical anti-borders group of Perez. I mean, Perez was the guy. So this, I mean, he is probably, I mean, under Obama, he was probably the most radical left member of Obama's cabinet. And I mean, think, let that sink in for a minute. And yet the media is presenting him as the responsible establishment middle of the road choice compared to Ellison, which is really kind of funny.
And Mark, under his leadership at Justice, you and I both know, because of our friendships with Christian Adams and others, that the Justice Department in his particular division really moved to prosecute voter intimidation and voter problems, but not against white voters. In fact, Perez himself said, according to a review of operations of the voting section in Civil Rights Division conducted by the Office of Inspector General Oversight and Review, they said that, Perez said that investigators, he told them that creating equal protections for white citizens would create dramatic complications. He said white people are not entitled to protection under the Voting Rights Act. So that's why, I guess, you know, he dropped the case against the New Black Panthers, because according to him, white Americans didn't have, there was nothing that people of color could do in regard to voting that could be prosecuted. It was all about intimidation to people of color.
And see, I mean, that's my point. That's kind of where the radical left is today. This isn't like the old style liberals from 50 years ago who were wrong on a lot of things, but they actually believed in, you know, equality of citizenship and equality before the law. This really is a kind of, this is the modern left, which is grievance-based, group rights, that kind of thing. And that fits into not only his work at the Justice Department, but also his, you know, perspective on immigration and other matters as well. So, you know, in one sense, though, you know, it might even be good that he's head of the DNC now, because he's so left-wing that, you know, it's kind of comparable to Jeremy Corbyn in Britain, you know, the late head of the Labour Party there, who is just a kind of crackpot left-winger. The problem, of course, is that Perez is smooth. He's smart. Keith Ellison was so out there. You know, I mean, the man was a member of the Nation of Islam until
Mark,
he decided to run for election.
Hold that thought for a second. Mark Akorian is the director of the Center for Immigration Studies, which is the think tank for the immigration, legal immigration, I guess I could say. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I know that Tom Perez is part of a key person in place to do the bidding of the left. We're going to talk about that further. We'll pick up the discussion on Keith Ellison.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, a lot of economic data coming out this week, so we should be getting our fill of numbers for the month of January, the first month of the year. Not to mention, we're going to be getting job numbers next week and some information this week on February numbers. First of all, we get durable good order numbers. They're already out. Durable goods, well, up only 0.2%. That's ex-transportation. By the way, exports or shipments declined about 0.6%. This, again, a January number. We're also expecting pending home sales this week. That should be out. Pending home sales. That'll be interesting to see how that's going. But the key word there is pending, so we don't place a lot of weight on that. We're getting our second look at fourth quarter GDP. Now, the first look was 1.9%, pretty anemic. I suspect that second quarter might be a tiny bit higher, maybe in the 2% range, but we'll see. Chicago manufacturing consumer confidence, as the government sees it, expecting to go down slightly. That's coming out also. Personal income and personal spending numbers coming out. They're numbers I always like to see, along with construction spending. That also out. We are going to get auto and truck sales number, and those numbers are going to be for the month of February. And then on Friday, we get the ISM service sector for the month of February. That's expected to be up a bit.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you, filling in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. My guest is Mark Krikorian. He's the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. And we're talking about the new head of the Democratic National Committee, who is Tom Perez, the former labor secretary under President Barack Obama. He is actually quite radical. In fact, Mark, would you say, is he more moderate than Keith Ellison, the first Muslim congressman from Minnesota? If you had to compare, is he actually more moderate? Is that possible?
No, I don't think so. I think his presentation is more moderate. In other words, he's smarter. He's more polished. He gets maybe a little better how to present himself. And his baggage, historical baggage is pretty bad, but it's not the Nation of Islam, you know what I mean? Which is, frankly, the Ku Klux Klan without the hoods. I mean, the Nation of Islam is just a crazed, wicked organization, quite frankly, with a just bizarre crackpot ideology, even more crackpot than kind of regular left-wing ideology. So my point is that Perez won out because first of all, the Democratic establishment wanted him, but I think they wanted him because he's more presentable in a case. He's not quite as obviously scary as Ellison is, but I don't think ideologically or politically there's really any meaningful difference between the two of them.
Yeah, and I'd like to explain for a second, and you said that La Casa del Maryland, or Maryland, Casa, was it? I'm sorry, I think I got the name wrong. Casa de what?
Casa, de Maryland. It's in suburban, yeah. Maryland, and the Casa originally stood for Central American Support Center or something like that, and they just turned to Casa, means house in Spanish. So
yeah.
That's what it's called, and it's in the whole D.C. area, really. It's the most active activist group for illegal immigration and against immigration enforcement.
And you explained earlier that it was funded by George Soros in part. And I need to say, because people listening might not know, that George Soros is a Hungarian billionaire. He's a socialist leftist, probably slash communist. His father colluded with the Nazis. He is Jewish in lineage, but they certainly turned against their own people. And he's been spending millions of dollars trying to undermine the American government. He is a citizen. Why he's allowed to continue, I don't know. But he is the funder for Tom Perez's organization. So one other thing, Mark, what do we know about Tom Perez and Sharia law and Islamism?
Well, I mean, he's obviously himself in no way an Islamist or anything. But like a lot of the left, there's a kind of, it is something they call this both in Europe and here, a red-green alliance. In other words, between the leftists, the red, and the Islamists, the green. And he is, you know, he represents that same idea of sort of sympathy and openness toward a lot of the Islamist ideology, even though the specifics of it, he, like other leftists, don't share. I mean, he's not for, you know, stoning homosexuals or anything like that. And yet, because Islamists hate the same things he does, in other words, they both have the same enemy, which is the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law, there's a kind of alliance of convenience. And again, you've seen this in Europe all over the place, and I think he's an example of what we're seeing, of how that works in this country.
All right, so the point of this was to explain to people listening, to me, the point is that we are in for some trouble, and no question about it, in the form of a Tom Perez who's the head of the DNC. We haven't seen anything yet. And Mark, before I let you go, we only have a minute and a half. We expect the executive order, the second executive order on immigration to come out tomorrow. What do you know about that?
It's probably actually coming out Wednesday is what I'd heard now. I think what they're going to, what it's going to be, it's a revised version of that travel pause, the one that limited visas for several months from these terrorist countries. I think they're going to have, they're going to tighten it up, and they're going to specifically say it doesn't apply to green card holders. But I don't think that's going to stop it from being sued again. And I don't think the Ninth Circuit judges are going, I think they're just going to, you know, freeze it again, stop it, because their decision wasn't based on law. It was simply a political decision by those judges. And if they don't agree with it, they're not going to agree with the new reversion either. They just don't like it, period. And I think they're going to do everything they can to stop it, even acting illegally, as the Ninth Circuit did.
So really, there's not going to be any way to implement that, if that's the case, short of a Supreme Court decision.
Maybe, except that, remember, that executive order wasn't some permanent new policy. It was just a temporary pause to develop a new policy. So in a sense, the fight over the actual executive order is less important than what it represents, which is the attempt by judges to decide for themselves what immigration policy should be and take it out of the hands of the electorate, so that voters don't get to decide through Congress and through the president what immigration policy is that judges decided. That's the real fight here. That's what's at stake, not the specifics of the executive order, in my opinion.
You know, I'm guessing probably another thing is they're not going to issue that order till the day after the State of the Union address, which is tomorrow night, and that would make a lot more sense. It's going to be interesting. Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies, always a great resource and a trusted one. Thanks, Mark, for joining us on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. Let me just say Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins. And if you would like more information about FRC, it's frc.org, frc.org, or at T. Perkins, at T. Perkins. By the way, my show is Sandy Rios in the Morning. You can listen from 8 to 9 in the mornings. That's Eastern Standard Time. And it's at Sandy Rios Tweet for the Twitter account. All right, we're going to come back in just a second and find out what's going on with Congress. Are they doing anything? Just asking. We know they're being somewhat harassed in their town halls, but other than that, any legislation being passed? And if so, why not? Sandy Rios, on Washington Watch. Back after this.
You can help plant seeds of the gospel and spread the message of the American Family Association by purchasing multiple copies of the AFA Journal, the monthly publication promoting a biblical standard of decency in American culture. Call 800-326-4543, option 2, and learn about placing copies of the journal in your church, school, office, or place of business. 800-326-4543, option 2.
There are many battles today about skin color.
Race is one of the most important issues of our day. Race in America with Dr. Alveda King. One of the resources from the AFA Cultural Institute can help you and your family or group develop a biblical view of the issue.
I would even say now that the content of God's character It's what we as human beings must begin to pursue more.
Visit afastore.net to find all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Challenges await a Christian ministering to a Muslim friend.
They have no mediator. You still got a holy God, you still got a broken law, and you've got the reality of hell described in even more vivid colors than anything we find in the Bible.
Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries, helps bridge the misunderstanding and lack of communication between Christianity and Islam. Look for the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, Reaching Muslims with the Gospel by Dr. James White, when you visit afastore.net.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Sandy Rios back with you, filling in for Tony Perkins at Washington Watch. Lots of things happening on Capitol Hill, or on the other hand, maybe not. I can tell you this, that the lights at the White House are on like 24-7. The President of the United States is burning the midnight oil, and you can see from the faces of his advisors, so are they, working long, hard hours. Well, how about the members, the people that sit in the Senate, or those in the House of Representatives? How about them? Is the midnight oil being burned? Are they getting their work done? Are they passing legislation? Are they vetting nominees for the president? Well, I can't think of anyone better to ask about than Tommy Binion. Tommy is the Director of Policy Outreach for the Heritage Foundation, and he joins us this afternoon. Hi, Tommy. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sandy. Great to be with you.
Great to have you, Tommy. Tommy's been working on the Capitol Hill for a long time, and I have to tell you, I always trust his judgment, and that's why I ask him to join us. I don't think it's anything that we can, no one would argue, Tommy, that the president isn't working around the clock. I think his staff is probably scrambling to keep up with him. Wouldn't you agree?
That's right. And you mentioned that you can see it in the faces of the advisors. And that's a time-honored tradition in American politics. The first 100 days of a new president's administration, especially in a context where there's where his or her party is in power. In both chambers of the Congress, the 100 days is a period of activity that's fast and furious. It's when the president's political capital is highest and his ability to achieve his agenda is at its highest. And so they work around the clock.
Okay.
But unfortunately, the story I have to tell is that for 10 days of the first 40 days, for this whole entire past week, the Senate was on recess.
Yeah, so the Senate was on recess for 10 days out of the 100 days. Now, Tommy, is that normal? I mean, is it normal for them to take a 10-day break under these kinds of circumstances?
No, it's not normal. It's normal for a president's cabinet, first and foremost, a president's cabinet to be confirmed at a much faster rate. In fact, President Trump's cabinet is confirmed at the slowest rate since President George Washington's was, and that was before the 10-day recess. The other side of the coin here is that for a month, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blamed the Democrats on slow walking the confirmation process. And for a month, they could.
Uh-oh. We'll have to get Tommy back. All right, so what he's saying is, it's certainly true that Mitch McConnell and other leadership in the House and other people were blaming the Democrats. And certainly true that Democrats have done everything they can to stonewall these nominations. They've put in a, what they call the 30-hour rule, where 30 hours of debate have to take place over each nominee. And that's terrible. It's very slow. And that there's no question about the fact that they have tried to slow this process down. But the point that Tommy's going to make is that the Republicans have to take the blame. Look, if the Democrats are slowing down the process to approve these nominees, then all the more reason why the Republican leadership wouldn't stay and work long hours and stay there and make the Democrats do whatever they have to do, debate, filibuster, talk, blather, you know, for the hours that they have planned until these nominees are in place. But they're not doing that. Instead, they're taking vacations. And while we're waiting for Tommy to return, I'll tell you something else. They are planning on taking 2 weeks in April, 2 weeks of the first 100 days, 2 weeks. And I know from an insider who talked to one of the members of leadership at a private personal conversation when challenged about this, the member of Congress laughed and said, well, you know, we have wives and they're planning vacations and we don't want to make our wives mad. That's what one of the leaders told a person. Tommy is back. All right, Tommy, I was filling in some of the blanks and talking about that two-week vacation they're planning in April and how one member, one person in leadership was quoted as saying that they have wives who have planned these vacations after all, and they, you know, they would, their wives would be mad if they stayed in session. But let's go back to this. The point you were talking about is that the Republicans have been blaming the Democrats for stonewalling, which they have been. But what part do the Republicans play in the slowness of this process?
Well, they could have been running the clock throughout the week last week. So if every nominee takes 3 days of Senate floor time to get confirmed, well, that's three nominees the Senate could have done last week that they were not doing. So when the Senate returns today, all of the clocks start over and the Democrats can continue to run out time. Time is a very important concept in the Senate. There's debate that's limited by a certain number of hours. And so the Democrats are exhausting that time. They're making the clock run all the way out rather than collapsing the time, as they're sometimes allowed to do. And so we didn't have the opportunity to get any of those nominees confirmed last week as the Senate was on vacation. And to your point about the members of Congress, their schedules, their families, I don't think that there's anybody, certainly none of your listeners, who has sympathy for members of Congress, given that the military deployments throughout the world, the men and women who sacrifice themselves in many cases, they don't get vacations. They take year-long deployments. They don't get to go home on weekends, and they don't get 2 weeks every other month off to go home and visit their families. Certainly, we can expect more of our representatives in Congress.
You know, Tommy, that's the thing that I've noticed since I've been in Washington is really the unseriousness of the leadership in Washington, in both houses, the unseriousness. You know, I've actually challenged in private meetings in some very serious face-to-face challenges. And I remember hearing one key member of the Senate on something very, very important. It was a crisis situation. I can't remember which crisis. But he looked at me and he said, well, what do you expect? What do you want us to do? And I just thought it was something that was really urgent and important. And he's asking me what he should do. You know, I just don't, there's sort of a bubble around them that makes their, it's almost like they see through a different set of glasses. They're comfortable. So there's no urgency. I guess if you get really cynical, when you talk about the leadership, do you think they're actually trying to set, okay, you probably can't say this, I'll ask you anyway, do you think they're trying to set Donald Trump up for failure?
I think that there's definitely something called failure theater, where there's a piece of an agenda they don't want to enact, and they set up sort of a straw man bill, some preposterous proposed piece of legislation, and they say, see, this bill can't pass. We can't do what you expect of us. We can't solve the problem that you're expecting us to solve. And they create, you know, a straw man or a failure theater to demonstrate that, where the truth is, there are paths forward, there are proven paths forward, there are proven ways to succeed in enacting the conservative agenda that they're unwilling to use. Obamacare is the perfect example of that. The House put out a bill last week that is not destined for success. It would not. It has a very close to 0% chance in passing in the Senate. And yet, there it is. That's the House's work product on repeal and replace Obamacare. It's not, as you use, the term you use, seriousness. It's not a serious effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. It's an exercise in futility, and I think they know that. And I think that there's all, you know, they're manipulating all the dynamics at play, the politics and the various stakeholders around Congress and the various opinions of their members, to try and basically say, we can't do it like you want us to do it, and so we're going to have to do it this very particular way, which happens to suit their needs.
You know, interestingly enough, you know, Betsy McCoy, I think Betsy was Attorney General for New York State, but she's a firebrand, and no one has made themselves more expert on Obamacare than Betsy. And she made a statement on AM 970 out of New York. She said, Paul Ryan isn't doing his job. And she said, if he can't do his job as Speaker to hold these Republicans together and get a repeal and replace bill through, somebody else should be Speaker. And she went on further to say that Ryan has attached things to his version of the replacement bill that are very unpopular. And she said he's got to get on board with Donald Trump because Donald Trump's program is popular. Are you talking about the same version that she's referring to?
Yeah, there's a 100-page bill that leaked last Thursday evening or early Friday morning that is supposedly represents the Speaker's repeal and replace bill. There are many, many aspects of it that are very unpopular. She's absolutely right. It would be extraordinarily difficult to imagine this bill passing the House and Senate and becoming law, but it's put out there as if it's the path the House is going down. Now, without saying anything more about the Speaker's role in this, I'll just tell you, repeal of Obamacare has already been done. At the end of 2015, Republicans delivered on the promise to repeal Obamacare. They passed it in the House. They passed it in the Senate. They put it on President Obama's desk. There is a way to do this. There are the votes there for that process. It has been done exactly as it could be done right now. And yet, it could be done that way, the way they did it 2 years ago. It could be done that way tomorrow. And President Trump could sign the repeal of Obamacare. But that's not what we see happening. What we see happening is this very convoluted repeal and replace with all these various aspects that don't enjoy majority support in the Congress being floated. And also, we're 40 days into President Trump's presidency, and the biggest campaign promise, repeal Obamacare, is looking less and less likely.
Tommy, tell us what has Congress done? What have they been doing? When they meet day after day and they are in session and they're not on vacation, what is it that they are doing?
Well, they've done a handful of these bills called Congressional Review Act resolutions. So President Obama, his administration, enacted 22,700 rules. These are, basically regulations promulgated by the vast bureaucracy. 22,700 rules. And so the Congress, at a very slow pace, is considering resolutions to disapprove of those rules. It's a bill from the 90s called the Congressional Review Act that allows this process to take place. The House has done in the neighborhood of 12 or 14 of these resolutions in the early part of this year, and the Senate's done in the neighborhood of 4 or 5, 3 of which have made it to President Trump's desk and have been signed. They're also confirming President Trump's cabinet nominees at a very slow pace, but that is taking up some time. They're preparing to do hearings on the Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch. They have some answers to the questions, what have you been doing? But when you put them in context and when you consider the clarity of the promise to repeal Obamacare, I have to say at this point it's extraordinarily disappointing considering the opportunity that they have.
Tommy, we only have a few minutes left, and I can't let you go without asking you to predict what you think is going to happen tomorrow night in the House and in the joint chamber. When President Trump presents his State of the Union address, I'm hearing all kinds of mischief is planned. What are you hearing?
You know, I don't think President Trump is very popular with the Democrats in Congress at all. I think they expected a very different election result, and there's a lot of vitriolic feelings towards him because he won. Whether or not those members of Congress choose to behave like professionals, choose to behave like adults, we're going to find out tomorrow night. I don't think that they're, and this is, you know, if what the left has been doing, if the egregious protests, the violent protests, sort of despicable nature of the response of the left to the election of President Trump boils up into Congress, I think the American people are going to react the same way they've been reacting to these ridiculous protests. They're going to be disgusted by it. That nobody sees what happened on Inauguration Day and goes to join the cause of the left. No, they think that they're just sore losers. And so if the members of Congress on the national stage choose to behave in the same way that the protesters have, I think the American people are going to respond in the same way they've responded to the protests.
I think you're probably right, Tommy, but I guess I kind of dread watching in some ways. I know that President Trump is always compelling. Whatever he says, it's going to be interesting. It will not be boring. But I really do dread to see because they have, it seems to me that the members of the House have gotten so far to the left, not all of them, but lots of them, that I don't think there's anything they won't do. You know, I'm reading that they're planning on bringing illegal immigrants. They're planning on bringing a lot of Muslims supposedly affected by the temporary ban. What, for the few hours that it was in place? And they're bringing all kinds of opponents. And whether they'll have, whether it be noisy or what they'll do, or whether they'll shout or, you know, we just don't know what they're going to do. And I kind of dread it. It's kind of embarrassing, honestly, as the nation, because people around the world are watching.
It is embarrassing, and so have many of the protests of the left been embarrassing. But my hope lies in the fact that I think they do so at their own peril. This isn't a sentiment shared by the majority of the American people. I think almost everybody is embarrassed by it the same way you and I are. And so to act like this in front of all of them, they're only doing themselves damage.
I think you're right. And one last quick question. These town hall meetings, are congressmen canceling them? What are you hearing about that?
Well, the easy solution would be for them to stay in Washington and get their work done.
Oh, there you go. You know what? I like that answer. And actually, there's the music, so we're going to have to leave it with that. But Tommy Binion, Director of Policy Outreach for Heritage Foundation. Tommy, thanks so much. We appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios, filling in for Tony Perkins, by the way. This has been Washington Watch. For more information, go to frc.org or at Tony Perkins is the tweet address. And this is Sandy Rios. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk, 8 o'clock on Eastern Standard Time on this dial. It's been a pleasure filling in for Tony, and hope to talk to you soon.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.